Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
You really piss me off, Jim. Human life is far too precious to risk on crazy stunts. Maybe it didn't cross that macho mind of yours, but you should have been killed when you fell off that mountain.
It crossed my mind.
And
even as I fell, I knew I wouldn't die.
Oh, I thought he was the only one who's immortal.
Oh, no, it isn't that. I knew I wouldn't die because the two of you were with me.
I do not understand.
I've always known I'll die alone.
Well, I'll call Valhalla and have them reserve a room for you.
All right, Dan, ready? Jesse, ready?
Yep.
Ready to go?
Are our levels okay?
I think so. You want to do a quick
check? Chief O'Brien!
Milana's on it.
Hey. Okay, let's do it!
I think levels are sounding A-okay in my book.
All right.
And we've got a lot of podcasting to do.
Book.
So let's get right to it.
Okay.
We needn't bullshit people around.
No.
We needn't do that.
Hey, the time's going on already.
Yeah, because we started the podcast.
Oh, we're already 20 seconds into it.
Oh, no.
Look at that. It's clicking away.
I gotta get on it.
Yeah. B'Elanna's on it. We're on it. The It's Got Star Trek podcast is on it.
Brave soul.
I was hoping you'd play that, actually.
Hello, boys.
Oh, man.
All righty. So, there's some clues for you. In addition to the title of this episode,
we have traveled far!
We are about to embark on a two-part episode. Two episodes. That will unified will be a discussion of Star Trek V: The Final Frontier. All right,
Star Trek Jive.
Aha.
Okay.
All right.
We're doing two. What were you saying? We are about to do two episodes for.
I tripped myself up because I couldn't. I was mentioning that we were doing a two part episode, as in there will be an episode this week and then an episode next week to conclude our discussion, because we're talking about a movie just like we did with Star Trek 3.
Mm-hmm.
We want to stretch it out over two episodes. When we did Star Trek 6, the only other movie that we did, we just put out like a 2-hour 45-minute episode.
Yeah.
Oh, was it super long?
It was super long.
That was in the olden days.
And that was in the olden days when we didn't,
we didn't even have sounds or anything.
We
didn't have any gamey games or soundy sounds.
It wasn't even a podcast. It was just two hours and 45 minutes of silence.
Jibber jabber.
Digital silence.
I don't believe this.
But you should go check it out nevertheless. But with Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, we split it into two separate podcast episodes, and that seemed to work very well.
That was
well.
My idea.
Yeah.
You made that up.
And so we're taking that idea,
that's why
following up on
idea.
That.
I made it up.
And now we're doing Star Trek V: The Final Frontier. This, what you are listening to now, is part one of the two-part episode.
He can't be serious. He can't be serious.
These are serious charges.
Indeed. Okay, and so this week we'll try to cover sort of the first half of the episode, or the movie, I should say. First half of the movie.
One big episode.
We'll see how successful we are at that. But basically we'll cover the first bit of the movie, and then next week we'll cover the last bit of the movie, Star Trek V: The Final Frontier.
Your threats amuse me, Captain Chekhov.
But first,
that's how I like to go into everything. But first.
Have you been saying that a lot lately? I don't remember if it's on the podcast or in real life.
No, it was one other time in the a few podcast episodes ago.
Okay.
All right. talking about. I think it was actually probably several, more than a few. It was several.
Right. So you've
can a few be a
buffer.
Several? Can a, is a several more than a few?
Several is more than a few. Yeah.
So you get a you get one. You have a couple of
couple,
things. You got a few
a
things.
Few.
Then you have several
to,
things.
Three to five.
Several.
Yeah.
Many.
Yeah. Several's got when you imagine somebody saying that they're dealing with several things, you imagine like a harried farmer juggling eggs. Right. Just you got all these eggs.
What about
he's like, oh, I got all these eggs I got to deal with.
A bushel. You have a bushel?
You made that up.
Well, a bushel seems more manageable somehow because you just sort of grasp
it. Put it in a big basket.
Grasp it by the husk. Yeah. By the hand. Well, anyway.
The husk. Grab that bushel.
I don't think I could take it in my present condition.
Well, we are going
That's evident.
We are going to try to get through this swiftly. Because when
evidence!
One reason we're doing this is we're recording this all in one night. But that's just not
what?
To,
who
not
says
to, not to give away the secret.
What?
Not to give away
you made
the
that
secret.
Up. I don't believe this.
Yes, yes. So anyway, we're all a little amped and jazzed up to discuss
jazzed.
Star Trek V: The Final Frontier. We hope you are jazzed up to
Star Trek
listen.
Jive.
You have no authority
to our to our discussion. A reminder, of course, we do have a Patreon, which conveniently can be found at patreon.com/.
You can't be serious.
/ It's Got Star Trek.
And I will destroy you.
Where we post a bunch of goofy, silly, fun stuff there. If you'd like to help us out, that's one good place you can go to help us out. Sign up for that. Sign up for free. You don't get as much for free, but hey, it's you'll be notified when stuff comes out, and maybe you'll be enticed somewhere down the line to buy some stuff.
Or, that's exactly what I'm counting on.
I guess get a subscription. I don't know. You know, you guys know how Patreon works better than I do. Patreon. Okay, we did that. Oh, but if you aren't into the Patreon, another way you can help us out is to give us a review. And if you give us a review, longtime listeners will know, you will get a haiku.
Acknowledge.
Yes. A review for a haiku. No, a haiku for a review. Yes. You get a haiku for a review. Dan will write you a haiku. Custom haiku. He won't use AI or nothing.
If you don't write a review, you gotta fuck you.
That's Jesse's sort of private policy that Dan and
You've
I
You've developed a sense of humor after all.
Dan and I keep bringing this up to Jesse. That's his side project. It's the Jesse's fuck you project. Where he calls up each and every single person who did not leave a review. He tracks them down.
I call them up.
Hey, fuck you.
Hello.
For a moment. I thought you might actually do it.
Indeed. All right. Well, how about this? I think to get us started off, nothing better than by starting with this voicemail that we got from Sincera about Star Trek V, The Final Frontier.
Yes.
What's up? It's got Star Trek. It's Sincera. And I'm really happy that you guys are devoting an entire two episodes to Star Trek V, The Final Frontier. Is it possibly the worst Star Trek film there is? Yeah. Do I give a frack? I do not. There are a lot of things that are hokey and goofy, and there was problems behind the scenes. But you know what? It really comes down to beautiful character moments that I can't forget them. I'm going to try and guess where you're going to split the G, as the kids are calling it, with a pint of Guinness. But I think you're going to end it right at the reveal of Cybot being Spock's brother, so I'm gonna try and keep it to moments before that.
Spoilers.
There's good moments that really just stick in my mind, like Spock and McCoy and Kirk all camping out and singing together, and same time Sulu and Chekhov getting lost in a blizzard. They're just fun moments.
No, row.
And I'll even when I'm going through my annual or semi-annual rewatch of all the films, I'll usually skip it at first. And I'll go from Voyage Home, and I'll start with Undiscovered Country, and then I'll go to the Generation films. And then when I'm done, I'm like, well, it's time to watch Final Frontier. And it's always the one that I kind of end it with, and it's like, yeah, whatever. Looking forward to the episode. I will chime back in for the second half that you guys do, because that's where all the fun lines really are. Live long and prosper.
I am hardly in a position to disagree.
That's what you think. That's what you think, Sincera, because we are recording both of these on one night.
Yeah.
But we will be happy.
Hey, that's a good idea, though, he gave us about where to stop. We're supposed to stop now with Cybok's finding out Cybok's
yes.
brother.
And by the way,
I wasn't planning on it before, but he willed that into existence.
Yeah.
Does he get a haiku now?
Thank you.
Well, that's not
no,
a review.
That's not a review. A voice, that's just a voice. I'm not just like handing out haikus like they
that's
were.
Only
you're right.
Review.
I'm
like
sorry.
They were biscuits.
I don't mean to.
That's how you say it, right? I don't. I'm not handing out haikus like they were biscuits.
It depends on how many biscuits you make.
Like a whole bunch. So like enough for Thanksgiving.
Yeah, is a haiku review because they rhyme. So those are intrinsically tied together, right? It's not mm-hmm. It's not arbitrary that we offer a haiku for a review. It's because they rhyme. Mm-hmm. And Sincera, yes, unfortunately.
I see.
You won't get your comments on the next episode because we're recording that right after this episode. But please send them in. Send them in.
We'll psychic powers.
Talk about them on the following episode. And people will still get to enjoy and appreciate your comments. And thank you very much for your comments. And
thank you.
By the way, I mean, I also largely agree with Sincera on the view on this movie. Although mm-hmm. I give it a more positive outlook, I really like Star Trek V. Spoiler alert, it's a flawed movie.
It doesn't make much sense. Like, a lot of it, I like, there's certain parts of it that I really dig.
Yeah.
Like, some of the, like, there are some, like, emotional moments. The music is good. There's some
music
cool.
Music is fantastic.
There's some awesome scenes. There's, like, a nice ambiance. Like, for example, when they're on the... Okay, now, they call it Chakari. Is it actually Chakari? Or is it just, like, they... Okay, the question is, so Chakari is at the...
Chakari.
It's at the center of the universe. Now, is Chakari supposed to just be... the center of the place, the magical place at the center of the universe? Or is Chakari like more like Eden, like they say it is, where it's a magical made up place?
I think that's a good question for the next
because
episode.
Because does Chakari actually exist? Is that Chakari, or is it supposed to be?
I think no.
Because it's obviously that isn't fucking God,
no.
Right? I'm getting too far, aren't
I? No, but you make some very good points.
Right. Anyways, my point was.
But let's start at the.
What I was going okay, yes. Where I was actually going with that is that like the when they first arrive at the planet, like it was a cool feeling of wonder as they were going through it and stuff. So
no,
talking
I,
about the
it's,
nice moments,
it's a
stuff.
Flawed movie, and I think frankly people who
the whole thing that the Cybox and the crew's turn doesn't fucking really. Like, look, the crew just all fucking basically mutinies halfway through the movie off camera.
Yes.
Like, we don't even, we don't see
look,
it happen.
Again,
they're
again.
Just all of a sudden, they're
this
they're
is a flawed movie.
Yeah.
It's a flawed movie, and it deserves...
I see one directed by William Shatner.
Most of the critiques that are sent its way, but... there are plenty of flawed movies that people enjoy, and this is one of the ones that I enjoy because I enjoy it better than some other movies in the franchise. Honestly, I enjoy it better than Motion Picture. I definitely enjoy it better than Nemesis. I think I enjoy it better than Insurrection, which is I don't
Word,
dislike
yeah.
Insurrection. It's just sort of like, I can watch this movie
Insurrection is the most,
over and over again.
Insurrection is the most like, blah, I don't give a shit about
exactly. Well,
movies.
That's the thing there's less... motivation to rewatch it, even though I don't find it bad at all. I found it very
right.
entertaining.
Well, that's why
well done movie.
That's why I say it's like kind of like, bleh,
but you don't need to see it again.
Yeah.
This is a movie that I come back to because even though it is in some ways profoundly flawed, there are also things that I still remember so vividly. I not just remember that I've incorporated into my sort of personal philosophy over the years, and we can touch base on that as we go through the discussion. But a great place to start is with this opening sequence with this guy named Ja'an,
right.
by the way, which
Ja'an,
I never
right.
knew that was his name before, but his name is Ja'an, which it sounds like a Lower Decks Vulcan.
Is that the guy with the fucked
name.
Up teeth?
Yes, it's the monster man who's digging holes. And
how can I repay you for this miracle?
And the opening to this movie.
Wait, this part.
You're a Vulcan.
Yes.
If you remember what's happening on screen at this part, that was the weirdest.
Yeah, because he pulls his because Cybok pulls his hood back and starts like laughing, or he's smiling, and he's like, "You're a Vulcan." Yes. I love this. This to me is like I can imagine being in 1989, being like, "What the hell is going on here?"
Yeah.
It was really intriguing.
The opening scene is, to me, is crazy.
Yes.
Because, like, it starts with this sort
weird.
Of, like, you see this dirt farmer, like, you know, like, all hobbling around, looking weird.
Still unclear what he's doing.
And looking,
he's a hole farmer.
Right. And it looks like he has the most miserable fucking life, basically.
Yeah. like the shittiest guy ever.
Right. And then off in the distance, like, you see, like, Cybok approach them as if he's, like one of the fucking Wraith
yes.
Riders, or who are those?
In the Ring Wraiths.
Ring Wraiths.
In the Lord of the Rings.
In the Lord of the Rings. That's
the Nazgul.
That's what he kind of looks like, because all the shit's flapping around in slow motion.
Yeah.
You see this guy going, like, doot-doot-doot-doot, and then it cuts to, like,
and he's got to run to his like weird little rock gun.
Yeah, and it goes do 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 do, and then it's back to the horse going do 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 do. And so it's this intro, like this fucking this really intimidating crazy creature is coming across, and then it went and then it kind of
that
like
was a cool alliteration.
Yeah, I didn't even
crazy creatures do. Coming across.
Okay, cool. I didn't even mean to do that.
I apologize.
But then it like switches like on a dime, basically. He takes off his shit, and like we don't really know what happens. We just know he kind of like looks at the dude, and the dude's like, you know, oh, I'm all better now.
This or is he problem number
right,
one.
Share he your goes, pain.
Problem something. Number one with the movie is that Cyborg's influence is unclear how it's yes. how it manifests,
right?
Which becomes more ridiculous later.
As if a weight has been lifted from my heart.
Yeah. But by the end of the scene is total 180 from the beginning of the scene, which was like epic and slow motion, and there was tension and all this suspense. Yeah. And at the end, you just see like, you're a Vulcan. And he starts going goo, 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 goo. And he like makes this weird face. I don't know what he's doing with his hands. He's like touching his hands to his
face.
He's
a weird alien man, and he's upsetting. And I love
and,
it.
And like,
I love
why,
it.
Why is he touching at his gums like that? And then why is Cyborg's response to just laugh? Like, oh, ho, ho. Yeah. You know, like he's that king that's all like laughing at like at his
I fucking love this shit.
At his fucking
his jester. His fool.
Or just like, yeah, sure. Just sort of like being
what's
like
your, your analogy.
You know how kings, well, you went with it.
He's
you
his
know,
bitch now.
You know how kings like they'll go like, oh ho ho ho, yes, yes, indeed. You know, like Aslan in that South Park episode, who was supposed to be like fucking what's his name from
The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Aslan.
Jesus Lewis, who was friends with J.R.R. Tolkien, Christ. Who wrote the Lord of the Rings, which you referenced.
You know
earlier.
It's interesting. Yeah, so
I know many interesting things, Dan.
So at Aslan, it's all based on in the end, that's all based on a Jesus type character,
oh,
right?
Yeah?
Aslan is, yeah, that was C.S. Lewis, like Tolkien and C.S. Lewis had an ongoing debate. Tolkien did not like that C.S. Lewis was making such overt
and,
Christian
and,
allegories
and
in
I,
his story.
And
he
I
was
didn't,
a kook.
And I didn't realize this now, but I just compared Cyborg going, oh, ho, 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 to like Aslan, but Cyborg is sort of like a pseudo Jesus kind
pseudo,
of wannabe Jesus.
Well, yeah,
character.
Or,
yeah, he's
or
like a prophet.
So
or,
that's what
or
Jesus,
a cult leader.
So that's what Jesus.
Cult leader,
so that's what Jesus leaders do is they go like, ha ha ha, of course, yes, ha ha, you are right. Food for everyone, ha ha ha.
So I love this opening scene because I do think it's really intriguing. It's cinematic. Overall, Shatner's, he's not Kubrick, but I think he has a lot of interesting shots that he
where to get this power
and a lot of interesting ambition throughout this story. Not all, he doesn't accomplish all of it, and where he doesn't, it's a problem in some cases. The story itself is very ambitious, and you get that flavor right here in that opening scene because you're like, what is going on? Why is this guy digging holes? Who is this crazy Vulcan guy? Why is he laughing? That's weird. Because again, 1989, this is a new idea, this laughing Vulcan.
And how many
the weird fingers alien guy with his weird teeth.
How many Vulcans had facial hair?
That's basically
none.
None
of them. Yeah.
So that was another thing that was odd. We just did not see many.
True.
I think you saw.
He's like the only one.
Yeah.
It's not many.
Until you see Spock as a young man being all weird in Discovery.
Yeah.
Or if you go to Mirror Spock,
of course.
He had a goatee. Yeah. But I think that's a really interesting start to the movie. Now.
Yeah.
As I said, it does also have that clue to the problem. One of the problems in the movie is that the mechanism of Cyborg's influence is never adequately explained.
Right. No.
Is it a telepathic thing? Is it some special thing he learned in a secret Vulcan lore? No, I don't know.
But
because and in the opening scene, it doesn't matter because you're like, okay, this is a guy who's digging fucking holes. It's probably not too difficult to convince him of you know, hey, stop digging holes and come hang out with me.
Right.
When it, but as you say, Dan, and we'll talk in more detail about it later. When it comes to converting the entire crew of the USS Enterprise, that's like, what?
And
that's okay, you have to explain more to us, and you didn't.
And we don't know, like, the closest we get to an explanation of what he does is with McCoy, like, because it's basically he's giving people
and all of a sudden there's like a hologram or something.
Yeah, well, the conceit is that we're
holograms
enjoying a shared hallucination.
What I was saying is, he's presenting this hallucination. He's able to immerse the person, like all the
immerse the person,
give a sensory immersion into the hallucinations.
Yeah, and presumably that's what happened with this whole guy.
But so anyway, so that's right, and so that's and somehow. the hallucination combined with what we maybe can be a repurposing of Vulcan powers somehow, because we know Vulcans have mind powers.
They leave a lot to the imagination, and it's too much left to the imagination.
Right,
and so I'm wondering if, I was wondering if it's like, so Vulcans are like focused.
That's why he's laughing at
oh
you.
Oh my God. Vulcans focus their, Vulcans focus their mind powers on sort of like logical endeavors and stuff and getting in touch with people. But like, it seems, they don't explain, but it seems like it would suggest that maybe he's taking Vulcan powers and using them for like weird emotional things. He's getting people to actually face their emotions, which is one thing that's interesting. Whereas Vulcans, normal Vulcans, they like squish them down like Hank Hill. Yeah. Like, and like just keep
totally
it.
Hank Hill. They get weird urethras and everything as a result.
So it really, like, Cybok is like, He's got something going.
Well,
there.
That's one of the good things about this movie, and part of what I think makes it such an interesting story is that Cybok is, as most proper classic villains are, sympathetic. It's easy to be sympathetic to him, and even think, hey, maybe he's got the right idea up to a point.
He starts getting like really fanatical, and the other thing is one thing that would suggest that it's not simply Vulcan powers, or maybe this just speaks to his ego. At one point, he talks about how these powers were given to him.
Yes.
Given to him by God.
By God.
By considering, like, once again, that Vulcans can do all sorts of mind shit, I don't know why he's decided that these are God-given powers and not just the sort of Vulcan's powers being repurposed. They make no mention, really, of him actually being bestowed with powers of God, except for what he says for himself. So there's no reason for us to believe that. The only thing we know about it, that could get close to those powers are what Vulcans can do. And so that's why it just, the assumption is just like it's some Vulcan power
he
has.
Probably just a little bit out of his mind because
he
hasn't like done all the Vulcan shit to keep him from going fucking nuts. So, you know, he's fucking nuts.
Yeah, like the the Kulinar.
He hasn't gone through Kulinar.
Yeah.
Mm. Not even a virtual Kulinar.
Given to me by God.
Yes, exactly, right? Given to me by God.
Right.
So we start off with this sympathetic, but clearly he's a charismatic cult leader figure, right? You know that straight away. There's something odd about this guy. And then we transition into another thing that makes this movie a proper classic for me, very important to Star Trek lore, which is we get to see the initial camping scene. The mountain climbing and then leading into the camping scene.
Row, row, row your boat gently
row,
down
row,
the stream.
Row your boat
row,
merrily,
gently
merrily,
down
merrily,
the stream. Row your boat gently down the stream. Row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 merrily. Gently down the stream.
That shot at the beginning where Kirk was climbing the side of that mountain.
Well, Kirk's stunt double was climbing.
Well, there's one shot looked like it was William Shatner. No,
some of it was clearly Shatner. Probably not that high up. Probably like they did a camera angle.
They must have done
like
some crazy.
Off the ground
that was a pretty cool camera angle they did because when they zoomed in on Kirk's face or Shatner or Kirk, whatever, Kirk's face that looked like Shatner's face. I'm just going to say Shatner's face.
Totally.
And they zoomed out of the side. It looked like he was high up on a mountain. It looked like there was some kind of stunt going on. I don't know if William Shatner is known for mountain climbing. Like, why did he decide he's supposed to be mountain climbing here? Because that was obviously Shatner's idea.
Right. Of course. Everything in this movie is Shatner's idea to make Kirk look awesome.
The whole thing where they showed that way out shot of the side of the mountain and zoomed in on Kirk, I like that shot. Mm-hmm. That's kind of like, obviously it doesn't remind me of Discovery because this came way before Discovery, but it makes me think of Discovery and how have all these weird, crazy perspective shots.
Like Michael Burnham jumping on ships and stuff.
Well, when the shots where they'll start out in like far from space and the camera will zoom in, like go and... in circles and then fly in through a window and then fall into a toilet and come out.
Maybe Kirk was mountain climbing because his hero Jonathan Archer was into rock climbing and doing some mountain climbing himself. Remember there was that episode where Archer is rock climbing with was it his girlfriend or fellow captain or both? I can't remember. Anyway,
okay, can I just make a little thing here?
Yes.
Okay, so like.
No.
All these Star Trek movies are fun and stuff, but like we've seen these guys, like they come out of like they're sort of like semi-retired and they have an adventure, and then like one of them dies and they steal the Enterprise, they blow up the fucking Enterprise, and then they go rogue, and okay, I guess they like
playing
do some
games with life.
They do some crazy shit with the whales or whatever, but
they
like
save the Earth.
Like, why are they still in Starfleet?
What?
Are they still in Starfleet? They're on like shore leave.
Well, Kirk was demoted
I know they got demoted, but how about just like, how about you guys just go back to being retired?
Like, well, apparently Starfleet in this era has no fucking qualified commanders because they have an Enterprise that is like a shitty piece of shit, fucked up
Enterprise.
It's
like the
Enterprise
A, like they're just getting it going.
Like, yeah, it's like all
it was beginning to vary.
Cobbled together.
Now, it was like, there was a ship with some major firmware issues going on. But the Admiral was like, Kirk, you're such a good captain. We're going to send you in anyways with this shit ship. And like, you know, you'd think that regardless of how good the captain is, you'd probably want to make sure the ship wasn't falling to pieces. I think the only reason... I have somewhere in my notes the only reason that they made the ship shitty. Oh, yeah. It's because it's so
they wanted to stop the transporter from working.
It was to force them to have to get onto the planet and raid the planet themselves. Yeah. Like, because the transporter didn't work.
I think it was all about the transporter not working, they got to do all these cool scenes with the shuttles.
I think it was just to move the plot along. I mean, that too.
100% to move the plot along with shuttle scenes.
Right. Well, no. Let me fucking say it, okay?
All right.
I'm saying what I'm saying.
All right, good.
Okay, I'm saying that the reason that they what were they doing?
The ship was all shitty.
So they had to force like Kirk and company to get on the planet to go face to face with the rebelling terrorist organization and which basically got the whole thing moving because that's when Cybok met up with Kirk and captured him and brought him to the ship. And so the whole reason that happened is because they couldn't use their transporter because the ship was shitty.
Yeah.
And then there's also the shuttle fund too.
Shitty.
Yeah. So that was pretty much the only reason. But it's like, why was it all? And the whole claw business, like, there was always a threat of violence from that dude, but nothing ever happened.
Yeah, right. Nothing happened.
And they were talking about like,
but he looked fucking hot as hell.
Yeah, he did. And I love how they make the inside of the Klingon ship look back then. It's so gritty and dingy in there.
Bare.
It's so awesome. But like, at one point, I think they were saying, "Oh no, the Klingons are pissed because General Kord has been captured. They're going to come after us." I don't think Klaw is coming after them because he gives a shit about General Kord. From the start, they make it known that all Klaw cares about is glory and blowing shit up and looking like a badass and just being a dick. So the whole role of that whole Klingon and Klaw business was to just introduce some chaos into the plot
to sort
of mix things up as it goes along with a threat of tension that never actually
just
was
extra
tension
Klingon chaos.
Because it ended because all Kord had to do was to be like, stop that, you know, and at first Kord was just like, oh no, I'm too scared to like send him an order to stop doing what he's doing. I don't know if he's afraid that Klaw was gonna kill him or what, but Kord was like, I'm a foolish old man, I can't tell people to stop doing shit, but that's all he did. And then Klaw just was like, oh, I'm sorry, and then it was all good. So that's all that it took. And I don't even know why Kord was so worried.
I don't know either, but you know what? I do know is that it's about time for us to take
a break.
It's time for a break because we have to move along with alacrity here. So we will take a break, and when we come back, we will continue our discussion of part one, the first half of Star Trek V: The Final Frontier. Be right back.
You better
release him.
Alrighty, we're back.
In fact, I'm just getting started.
Oh, dear. Speaking of getting started, the movie really gets started with this El Capitan business, which we almost discussed and then got distracted. But main bits there is Kirk, of course, you know, and Spock. Like, if you just take it from describing, you're like, Kirk tries to go climbing, he falls, Spock saves him. But it's all the interactions.
Spock makes him fall.
Spock does make him fall by being distracting.
I know. So I don't know why. Spock could have figured out that was some bullshit.
Spock probably
wanted him
to fall. That's probably Spock's goal.
There were a few silly moments in this movie, and when Kirk fell off the mountain, that was a silly moment.
But I didn't dislike that because I actually thought one thing that this movie did well was it has frequent moments where it has a really touching setup. Right? Something philosophical, something emotional, making some point, because this movie does have a lot of larger points that it's trying to make. And I do think it makes a lot of them effectively about found family, for example, about life and death and all that other stuff. But an example is Kirk is up on the side of the mountain. It's that shot you were talking about in the, before, Dan. Mm-hmm. And then Kirk is taking a break and he's looking around at the fucking majestic Yosemite Valley. And then
you call this relaxing.
And Spock just shows up out of nowhere and starts fucking haranguing him. Mm-hmm. And it and to me that was it was amusing. And yes, borderline silly. There's a lot of silly stuff in this movie, but it was kind of like a Lower Decks thing. Lower Decks was really good at that, where they would do silly to touching, but then undercut it a little bit. You know, just a little bit.
Yeah, but I mean,
with the silly.
I mean, obviously, Lower Decks though is a more comedic show. Than...
Well, Lower Decks is more comedic and also much more advanced in the writing department.
I mean, the whole idea
and all that
the whole idea that the I mean, okay, I guess with Star Trek at this point, it's kind of lame to complain about all the dangerous shit.
Lame to complain, man. This Jesse, this guy's all about the rhymes tonight. Rhymes and alliterations.
I'd say it's lame to complain that a captain is doing shit that's too dangerous for his position, because obviously every captain in all Star Treks does dangerous shit they don't have to do. But Kirk is free soloing up a fucking mountain.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's and
like the mountain that everybody dies.
Yeah, yes. And Spock is, like you said, Spock is just harassing him, and then he falls off a cliff, and then Spock catches him, and Kirk's like, "Oh my god, if I'm a doo ba doo," you know. Like,
well, I think that's why we identify the most with McCoy. A lot of this movie is in my opinion, identifying with McCoy.
You really piss me off, Jim.
Yeah, and it's so cute to see. First of all, McCoy wearing a loosely bound kerchief.
Oh yeah, right. I actually made a note about that. He looked like Mr. Furley from fucking Three's Company.
Jack.
Yeah, that weird like hippie tie or whatever.
I loved it.
Cowboy hippie tie.
Well, everybody looks all like awkward in like their civilian clothes. They just like everybody like looks like they just don't know what the hell to do when they're not on this well, fucking
God damn irresponsible.
DeForest Kelly was known for being like a pretty smooth dresser. Now you take it, you know, whatever your opinion on how it, but he was always dressed in like in the motion picture. That's just like DeForest Kelly just wearing his own like 70s yeah. clothes with a beard, a big old medallion. And then here he's like old man DeForest Kelly, where he was wearing these kerchiefs, you know, you see his chest hair a little bit.
How do you like that? This guy never changes.
I was just so delighted seeing McCoy worried, looking on, talking about, you know, getting worried about talking to himself.
Playing games with life.
Which is a silly, silly joke, of course, but I thought it was an effective joke.
You know, you too could drive a man to drink.
But yes, then they have the scene around the campfire, which is a famous scene for very good reason that to my mind, one of the better written scenes in all of Star Trek, certainly in the...
Sorry.
No, go right
what
in.
The fuck?
Sorry, no, I didn't mean to do that.
I was just trying to make a touching point about a touching scene. And you're like Mr. Klangles.
That was an accident.
What was that clangle?
I do need to know now what that clangle was.
That clangle?
Yeah.
Clangle.
Oh, you'll find out.
Okay. All right.
Oh, shit. You're
going to be coy. Mr. T.
I'm Mr. McCoy.
Oh, I gotcha.
Mr. McCoy.
Yeah. So, but this scene is, you know, it's brilliant. It's just really well acted. It's a scene between these people who have worked together for decades, and who knows how much they liked each other behind the scenes or not, but you could tell that there was this actual relationship.
Yes.
And that's true throughout much of this movie, is all these actors are building off of these longstanding storylines and relationships between these characters. But I think none better executed than in this campfire scene.
Beans, Spock, but no ordinary beans.
I have little choice but to sample your beans.
Yeah. And I
bipodal seeds, Doctor?
Bipodal seeds. I would like to sample Dr. McCoy's beans as well.
I'm not careful, I'll end up talking to myself.
Yes.
I think they could have brought some better shit. I mean, they have replicators and shit.
Okay, so they were talking about like...
I think the marshmallow was coming out of a replicator.
Okay, marshmallow. That was some other silly shit.
I thought the caption was fucking up. Did they really say marshmallow?
Yeah,
I'm preparing to toast a marshmallow.
Must be those marshmallows.
Well, I'll be there. A marshmallow.
I chalked that up to another silly scene, the whole marshmallow. It was funny, though.
I loved it,
It was funny.
It's
funny.
It's so cute.
I know it was cute. It was very silly. It was very goofy. Silly.
It was people having fun camping.
They were camping.
It was fun,
okay,
yes.
So no, it was funny.
I'm more into camping than you guys.
The whole reason they did the Okay, so they were sitting by the fire, and they're like, you know, let's sing Camp Town Races. Like, who fucking actually sings Camp Town Races?
Well, that's why they didn't sing it.
They didn't know.
No, but they chose not to.
No, but
for
they...
For the obvious reason.
Okay, first of all,
they didn't know what to sing.
First of all, they suggested it, okay, as a serious option. So that's number one. Number two, they ended up going with Row, Row, Row Your Boat. Or as Kirk calls it,
row, row, row your boat. I love row. Do you know row, 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 do you row, know, row your boat?
The line row, readings row, in the scene row, is so great.
Count how many times he says row.
Row, 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 row.
Count how many times he says it.
Do you know row, 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 row your boat?
Row, 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 row.
Five times.
This is brilliant.
No, row, row, row.
That's pretty good.
Row, 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 row your boat.
I know a lot of people, they think Shatner did his best acting in Star Trek II or in Star Trek III when David died. But this is right there. Among them, and Rescue 911.
So the reason they went with row, row, row your boat is
row, 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 row,
row, row, row, row, row, row. The reason they went with it is so at the end they could say, what was it? Oh yes, Kirk goes, is it possible? They're in the observation room looking at some Eden, I guess. And Spock goes, fascinating. McCoy's like, are we dreaming? And Kirk goes, if we are, then life is a dream. That's the whole reason they brought up that row, row, row your boat part. Is because right. At the end, like, life is but a dream.
Life is not a dream.
Yeah. It's
called a callback.
Yeah, there was actually a second callback too. There was a couple callbacks.
That's called a theme.
There was a
thematic expression. As opposed to a nocturnal expression.
Oh, yeah, the other one was when Spock goes, welcome aboard, Captain. Kirk goes, I thought I was going to die. And Spock says, not possible. You were never alone, mm-hmm. Which is a callback to the beginning of the episode when Kirk says something very similar. Mm-hmm.
I've always known I'll die alone.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's two callbacks.
Part of what makes that campfire scene so touching.
I'd like to also point out William Shatner had some pronunciation issues on the
it
subject.
It wouldn't be a William Shatner performance if he had not had those.
Now, the question is he mispronouncing it or is everyone else mispronouncing it? Here we go.
It's him.
Moon over Rigel 7.
Rigel 7.
As opposed to Rigel.
Rigel 7, we always hear Rigel. Yes. So.
Moon over Rigel 7.
Which is an obvious play on moon over, my hammy or something?
Moon over my hammy.
Well, I think it's moon over my
hammy. No, moon over.
Moon over my hammy is the parody title.
No, what was that a moon over Miami? Moon over something?
Yeah, I think it's moon over Miami.
Moon over Miami was a piece we played in jazz.
Yeah, moon over my hammy.
Yeah.
But Rigel 7, yeah, that was a joke. But yeah, would you say that he mispronounced?
Well, he was from Canada, so.
Yep.
He didn't do it on purpose.
There were a couple good lines. I don't know if you have either of these, Dan. Well, I think you do. The McCoy line where he says, God, I liked him better before he died.
Oh, yeah.
That's a great line.
Wait.
God, I liked him better before he died. Okay, all right. Let's call it a night.
I love how at the end Kirk's like, all right, come on. Cut it out.
He's all like, rabble, rabble, rabble. But
like, cut
so
it out.
That's, of course, a great line, a classic line, a line that only makes sense in the context of this story, which makes it extra fun, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it carries so much weight, as well as being humorous. But the other line I really like, and you probably didn't get this because it's like a mumble line, but
mumble
it's as
line.
They're going to sleep, right? There's that funny, cute little scene where it's all like, Spock keeps calling...
Right.
He's Kirk, Captain, and Kirk is like, call me Jim. And then he's like, good night, Captain. Good night, Jim. Good night, McCoy. All of that. But right before the scene closes, you hear Shatner. There's like a pause, and then Shatner just says, I don't know. I just don't know.
Yeah.
No, I didn't have that one. I should have gotten that one.
And it's like, it was those little things, it was those additions in that scene and other scenes throughout the movie, those extra little bits that are character bits. They serve no plot purpose,
right.
But they flavor the scene.
Hold your horse, Captain. I'm scanning.
Hold your horny horse. Did you see those horses had like little horns on them because they were alien horses?
Oh, wow.
Cyborg's horse had little horns on it.
I did.
Face.
I thought you meant like they had a boner or something.
They did. I double checked. On my copy, I could not see any horse boners.
Okay, so
but I did see because
he could tell
horny,
this guy
horny,
knows
horny bones
so,
on their face.
So when Kirk and Spock were riding on the horse, Kirk goes Spock, and then Spock goes yes, Captain, and Kirk goes be one with the horse, and then Spock goes yes, Captain. Is that saying that Spock is scared of horses or doesn't
he probably
like riding
has
them?
Trouble riding horses?
That's a callback
to what
to when Spock when Kirk was climbing El Capitan, Spock said, you have to be one with the mountain right before Kirk fell. Because Kirk was like, I'm about to be one with your ass or something. I don't know. He's about to say something along those lines.
Be one with your ass.
I don't know. That's what I thought. Kirk, Spock is like, be one with the mountain. And Kirk is like, I'm about to be one with your butthole. I don't know.
It was broken.
Kirk's one of those captains that rides horses, and Spock's like not one of those.
So
don't ride horses on Vulcan.
Yeah, so I didn't think of that callback that Patrick pointed out, but I guess the implication also, though, was that, yeah, Spock isn't that comfortable with horses, I guess, because why else would he say that?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll knock you on your goddamn ass.
You ever been on a horse? It's freaky, man.
Yeah, I've been on a horse.
I like being on a horse. I wasn't
too into it. It was too high up there.
It's crazy when they start trotting, and then I start to think about how people fly on these things.
I know. You're like, oh my God. It's really slow down,
and when they sort of go crazy and start stomping on all the children, you know, and you're riding it, and you don't know how to stop it, and they're just stomping the children.
They're just
and you don't know what to do.
You're like, I don't know how to ride a horse. I just got on it.
It's really intense.
They said this.
It's beginning to vary.
Okay.
I wanted to say that when I was young, I thought that this was called the final frontier.
Off of my face.
I am in need of your assistance.
All right, what did you think it was called when you were very young, Dan?
When I was young, a wee lad.
When I was 17.
When I was a wee lad.
I drank my very first beer.
All right. When I was a wee.
All right. I don't know what's happening, Dan. You're scrolling up and down your screen. You're not actually saying anything.
When I was
wee.
Wee. Ooh, squee. Squee.
All right. Well, we've proven we can do that, Dan. Now let's prove we can conclude a point.
Easy, 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 Scotty. Easy.
Okay. When I was young, I used to think that this was called The Final Frontier because it was to be the last Star Trek movie. Was it to be? Wasn't that a theory for a while?
Not
wasn't
really.
A theory
you sort
that
of got that impression
because
it kind of sucks.
Well, no,
it can't be serious.
It was not necessarily considered to be the end. In fact, when they got around to doing Star Trek VI, Harv Bennett had the whole idea about doing a Starfleet Academy series, and then the network or the studio was like, are you crazy? We need more adventures with these folks. But that was the one. Then they were like, oh, then now we really have to make it the end. And that was partly because Star Trek V was not very well received. It did not do nearly as well as Star Trek IV and of course, the other movies. But anyway, so we move along home to Paradise City, right?
Where the grass is green and the girls are pretty.
Yes, like the song. But Shatner was not willing to pay for the rights to use that song. So unlike a J.J. Abrams movie, if J.J. Abrams were remaking Star Trek V, I'm sure they would have gotten the rights to Paradise City. But alas, he didn't. But what we do get to see is, as we approach Paradise City, is that it's very Mad Max. It's sort of like Mad Max by way of Total Recall.
So they chose a planet to sort of co-develop in the neutral zone, but why didn't they choose a better planet?
Yes, that's a good question.
They're all smart folks. And, like, they're all advanced civilizations.
And I don't even really know why they really bothered to even talk about it, really, because they introduced these three characters, Caitlin, which is the Romulan, Caitlin Dar, St. John Talbot, which is the Terran.
It's a great name. Brilliantly, of course, by David Warner.
Yeah.
And then General Cord. The only one that really had any effect in the rest of the movie was Cord.
Yes.
Talbot didn't do shit. And then later,
worthless.
All they did is, I think, what was it? Talbot said, like,
Eden.
Right?
Eden, yeah.
And then,
you know what he said? He said, Eden ain't cheating. Get it?
Yeah. And then Caitlin, also, she does later, is go,
For Tavor.
For Tavor.
Yeah. They just.
Kuitu. Kuitu.
Gesundheit.
Indeed.
Kuitu.
Gesundheit.
Yeah.
I know.
But, like, nothing really came of that plot line. Nothing ever happened with those characters. It's like, I don't even know why they introduced them.
Again, it's another example of hinting at...
Like I said, Cord is the only one that had an effect. Yeah. He's the one that all he had to do is like, you, Mr. Claw, you get back in line, you know?
Mr. Claw. Yes.
And what they've done here is they've hinted at...
You
an interesting story.
Or watch these puny things die horribly.
Good. Not the most well-placed clip, I'd say, but still a good clip, nevertheless. Okay.
He said that he was saying you have to do it, like you were saying. You were saying something, and I was backing up saying, yeah, you got to do it or watch him die.
Do it.
All right. I don't think I got to conclude what I was saying. What I'm trying to say is...
My bad.
The setup, again, like so much of this movie, this is a flawed movie. But flawed does not mean... Flawed to me is not the same thing as bad. Now, maybe there are people who don't enjoy it. I understand that. Again, that's fine. There's so much good hinted at here. There's some actual good, like the campfire scenes and other stuff that we're talking about here, but and the sexy Klingon guy. But then there's the stuff that's hinted at that's just not fully realized. And one of those things is this idea, like Jesse was talking about, of them putting of the great powers coming together and creating a boondoggle project. Right, that's interesting from a foreign policy or sort of a geopolitics standpoint. That's kind of interesting. It would be cool to know a little bit more.
Why do they do that?
We can infer some stuff, right? Talbot pretty much gives us the exposition along with Dar. Dar has the most exposition in this entire movie where when she's introduced, she's like, hi, my name is so-and-so. And by the way, 20 years ago, our three peoples came together. She's just explaining it all.
I don't know who you are or what you want, but I can tell you this. Our governments will stop at nothing to ensure our safety.
I don't know who you are. What you know.
Very South Park-y. But there's a lot that's intriguing about this. Mm. And I'm not even saying you need to know more details. But,
I mean, I guess you don't. It's just kind of it kind of introduces something that I would have liked to have like spent more time with if it's going to be introduced.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and I agree with you. Give all three. If you're going to introduce three characters, give all three of them a little bit more to do.
Right. I get what you're saying, though, where it is like a sort of a unification of like these three different cultures.
And you can imagine it's like real world examples. Like, for example, North and South Korea have the there's a district that in the demilitarized zone where they allow for some co-working in order to do some industry. I don't know if that's going on right now, but periods of time, right? They create things that are intended to try to foster some peace, okay?
Bipodal seeds, doctor?
That's cool. That's interesting. It would have been interesting to see some more of that. Where we're lucky, at least to some extent, is that you put somebody like David Warner in this role of Talbot, and he's able to, through his acting, through his characterization, give us a lot more than what's on the page. Mm. He has basically no lines, but he really pulls off this weary, probably alcoholic or substance abusing is the impression you get, just totally used to be into diplomacy or whatever and has totally become jaded about it. You can read all of that on him because he's just a really great actor, right? And I think you can do a little bit with what is it, John Cooper?
It's Charles Cooper.
Charles
plays
Cooper.
Charles Cooper was also in a video called Love Your Customers. Mm.
He also played Kempek in Star Trek TNG in a few episodes.
But
another
this,
Klingon.
This Love Your Customers, it's a... It's John O'Hurley encounters three employees in drastic need of customer service makeovers, the greetingless grocer, the touchy teller, and the witless salesman. Using theater as a metaphor and drawing on four simple ideas, Love Your Customers teaches employees how to perform great customer service and show their customers the love.
Wait, are you saying that this is like a corporate training video?
I think so. I think that's
hilarious.
Yeah, that's
it's so borderline, though, because you can see somebody doing that as
could
an
be
art,
experimental
like an art
theater.
Piece.
Yeah,
I know, right? I think I'm pretty sure it's like one of those corporate videos that Charles Cooper, aka General Cord,
that's fascinating.
Is in. Yeah.
I think he does a great job too. Dar, the character, there's not much to the character. Yeah. The actor doesn't necessarily bring too much to the character.
Well, I mean, they didn't really write much for
her. Yeah, I wouldn't say it's her fault necessarily, but
You got some you were talking about well, you were getting some Total Recall. I mean, they did have the three-breasted...
The three-breasted cat lady. Is that a Cation with an extra boob added on?
I don't really know, but she was all naked and
stuff.
But
why do you have... Why would you have an odd number amount of teeth?
Mammaries?
I don't know. And I mean...
That's what's improbable.
Yeah.
And now, it was like a set of four
cats
or six.
Cats would have like six or something.
Yeah, right.
And they don't have, you know, swollen... Human breasts are a peculiar, particular thing.
Right.
So this was a silly part. It was also silly when they went... And she hit their tail and she went,
I mean, that was, yeah, but it was great.
Silly.
It was funny.
It was so silly.
I even as a child, I remember watching this movie and being confused as to why throwing her into the water pool table seemed to render her instantly dead.
That's it. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Was she instantly dead?
That water pool table, first of all, they have a pool table with filled with water on a planet that I'm sure is running pretty low on water. Like the dude's
that symbolizes
dry,
excess.
Man.
I guess it symbolizes excess, but that did not look like an excess bar. That
it
looked
did
like,
not look
it
like
looked
an
like
excess
a
bar.
Mos Eisley cantina.
It was exactly
or
like fucking Mos Eisley cantina. And it was like a total like we want to be Star Wars,
right? And also another silly part of that scene is, or actually, I guess it was technically a few scenes after that, but in the same location when Kirk picks her up and throws her in that. A pool, which you just mentioned.
Yes.
He fucking military presses her like a few feet in the air, like 20 feet across the room. It was the most absurd throw.
Well, cats have light bones.
Okay.
You know?
I know they're bendy. They're just bendy.
You know, what is he, like 50 or something?
I know. And he can and he can climb a mountain, no problem.
But he wears a t-shirt that says go climb a rock.
Yeah, he does.
Just like Boimler wears in Lower Decks.
But he got all winded when he was like taking the ladder up that shaft, but like he had
not
no
as winded as
mountain.
McCoy. McCoy was the one who was like, dude, I can't fucking do this
shit. Well, no, McCoy was struggling hard, but you could see Kirk was kind of winded.
McCoy was like, I should be retired, and you're making me climb up a hilarious number of ladder steps.
The journey you undertook to reach me could not have been an easy one.
Indeed. Go climb a rock.
So
that's our introduction to the Paradise City, where we're going to keep coming back to this Paradise City, because like they just decided like lots of shit is going to happen at Paradise City.
Actually, back a second real quick. I just wanted did you guys like the amount of time they spent just watching Kirk and McCoy and Spock just kind of hang out, bullshit around?
Yeah,
because they spent a lot of time them just fucking chilling.
Yeah,
like
in I did.
That was fun.
I dug that because, and that's what I think we don't see enough of in modern TV, because I those are the character moments that make me care more for the characters.
It's true, but
and
some
make
the
drama more impactful later.
It's true, but it can go on. I'm not saying it necessarily did, but it's to me it started to feel like it was at least borderline getting too long.
I think that one potential issue this movie has is that,
and maybe it's because like I wished a few of those other scenes were fleshed out a little more. Maybe they could have trimmed off
some
here.
But it's also the way this is supposed to work is you can do the character stuff, the chilling stuff. Very. Not only can you do it effectively for the sake of doing it, it actually can make your story better because again, if you care more about the characters,
absolutely,
then you care more about what happens and their decisions later.
No,
but
no
what's
doubt.
Necessary is that it's also jumping into other scenes of interesting stuff that's hinting at what's going on while they're chilling, right? So the rest of the story is still supposed to be going on, and they do that in this movie.
You
it's
said
just doo-doo. That,
doo-doo.
It's just, but I didn't say duty, duty.
No, but you said doo-doo.
Because those other two dudes,
we got bigger problems to deal with.
Are they in Yosemite too, and they just got lost? Or are they somewhere else and they got lost?
I don't know. They look like they're in Yosemite.
I mean,
it looks like it's just like down up the path or something.
I absolutely 100% agree that these scenes make you care more about the characters and thus makes things more impactful. My only point was maybe they could, in my opinion, and I totally am fine if someone disagrees with the amount of time, that's personal preference. In my opinion, I think they could have shaved a few off that and added to a few of the other spots that were so like, simply because if we had more time, if the movie was twice as long, sure, keep all that shit in there. But like, there's things that I kind of wanted, you know.
I'll ask the audience to write in at feedback@hiscotstartrek.com.
He can't be serious.
Subject line, I disagree with Dan. And then in the body of the message, say whether or not you disagree with Dan. We'll just use I disagree with Dan as a subject line just so we can collate all these messages together.
Very well. Good. Do what you must, but no more.
Speaking of doing what we must, it is about time to take another break.
It's what?
It's yes.
What?
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 Oh wait, you also implied you were talking about how they're old friends that hang out together, and you were like, I don't know if they necessarily got along. Was there
in real life?
As I know, but was there any sort of rumors that Shatner and Nimoy? And,
I think it's on and off again.
And,
it depends.
And you know. Forrest Kelly. There's, like, was there any rumor?
There are tales.
Because we always heard about the Shatner. George Takei.
I think those three got together, got along better.
That's what I assume.
But I don't know that they were hanging out at each other's houses. Like Shatner likes hanging out with the you know, Henry Rollins and fucking people like that, right? You know.
Well, the other dudes are dead now.
Well, you made you made it seem like it was mildly scandalous, or at least
That was not my intention. I was just saying that regardless,
maybe scandalous is the wrong
word. I
have
no idea. I am not knowledgeable enough to understand what their real life relationship
was. But there
was
a thing between Takei and Shatner.
Yeah, but and Doohan as well. Doohan didn't like Shatner, but
oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, but anyway, that all being put to one side right over here. Right over here. Let me just hold on. Let's just
excuse me.
We're gonna put it right over here.
Don't do that.
Right over there.
Don't
right?
do that.
Okay. And then
I can see it from here.
Don't do that.
You don't like when I do
it's
that
over there.
Would you prefer that it was a little over here?
I like it better over there.
Oh my God! Don't do this to me.
All right, Dan. You don't.
You are
like
mad.
It? All right. I understand. I know it is a little uncomfortable.
Unwise.
All right. What isn't unwise is if we stick to our format and keep moving things along by taking a quick break. And so we're going to do that
break,
right
babies.
Now. And when we get back, we will conclude part one of our two part discussion of Star Trek V: The Final Frontier. Be right back.
Stop.
Okay, we are back.
Zip. Come and get it! Come and get it!
Okay.
Bones, knock it off!
Okay. Bones, knock it off!
Bones!
Bones, you're being so crazy out there, Bones. What are you even doing? What are you even doing, Bones? We're right here. You don't gotta ring the bell.
You gotta ring the triangle.
Ring my bell. All right, now, honesty time.
Ring my bell.
Honesty time from both of you.
Oh, no.
How do you like that? This guy never changes.
Dan and Jesse, honesty time. Just and honest, understanding.
Honestly.
Understanding this is a fairly widely listened to podcast. So word
it was
might
not
get,
my intention to
word might
you.
Get back to people that you don't want to get back to. But I want to ask you.
Let us explore.
Since both of you were
together
in bands that included, at times, included a triangle player, did you respect the triangle player or not?
The triangle player is just one of the many instruments that is covered by one of the several people
there's
in
usually,
that section.
They're right. There's a bunch of people back there and they kind of trade up and there's a bunch of things.
Who get, I, and I'm speaking from a...
Because there isn't always a triangle part necessarily.
Yeah. I'm speaking from
well,
complete
it's,
ignorance and I'm not trying to color it in any direction.
No, that's cool.
I'm curious, like the
it's
person who gets a triangle, are they the extra awesome person because if they get
the
it
point,
wrong?
No, the
or
point.
Or you give it to the person
the leader
who,
gets the
who
snare
it.
Drums.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I was
going to
say. Like,
yeah,
it's because it's not the snare, right?
Yeah.
It's the ding-a-ling.
Usually there's timpani parts and snare parts.
But it's not like Ed Grimley who was like a triangle player. Like
right.
there's not like there's not they're not
was that Grimley a triangle
yeah,
player? Oh
yeah,
that's right. He's like I must say.
Yeah, there's not a triangle player. There's a person who plays the triangle among other instruments, and
yes.
there's probably a few people who have that role. Yeah.
The
but,
triangle
and they switch
player
off.
Plays like the ratchet and the cowbell.
But yeah. but while they're playing the triangle, they're the triangle
while
player.
They're playing the triangle. While they're playing the triangle. Wow. Okay.
Well, I'm glad we solved the mystery of that.
Plays the maracas and the castanets.
Of that sound effect. Let's talk momentarily about the fact that... about the fact that in order to save money, this movie reuses basically all the TNG sets, right? Like the bridge is like the battle bridge. All the hallways are just TNG hallways. Now, to be fair, the TNG hallways are reused from... like Star Trek the Motion Picture, right? So it is a heritage that goes back a long way.
And some of like 3 and 4, I think.
Yes,
like
absolutely. Yeah, but they built fewer sets, right? This is not a bottle movie per se, but it's very discreet. There's Paradise City, there's the shuttle bay they use a couple times.
Are you saying some of that's from TNG?
All the hallways are TNG.
Oh, I never even put that together.
Look at the hallways. In fact, they have TNG doors. They didn't even bother repainting some of them. It's just a TNG hallway.
Except
TNG
for some reason, doors. They added like perpendicular pipes across the bottom that they
to
had
try to make it look more old-fashioned.
Yeah, but like, why would they add those in the place where you fucking walk?
Yeah.
That's the place where you walk.
Yeah.
Why would you put that there? You could, like, in a big old starship.
Didn't Scotty say who
Enterprise
designed this?
A.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Yeah, he said.
Yeah, find the clip. Quick, Dan. Quick. Scroll.
I think this new ship was put together by monkeys.
By monkeys?
By monkeys. By monkeys. That's how I do my accent. I just go, by monkeys. buy monkeys.
Do you want to buy a monkey?
Scotty, at this point, has just become like a character of himself.
Yeah. We'll talk about that.
It's a big ship. You think they could move the pipes a few feet down. Speaking of that same scene, when Scotty goes like,
nothing amazing about it. I know this ship like the back of my hand.
Yep.
Like, when I remember specifically being in a theater, like, I was really young, and I kept saying to my mom in the theater, I kept being like, but he didn't hit the back of his hand. He hit the front of his head. Yeah. He hit the front of his head. Because in my head, he was like, the joke was, I know it like the back of my hand. Yeah. The joke I thought would be like, I know it like the, I thought it was like the back of your head was the joke. And he said back of my hand, which was actually the joke. But then I would expect, at this time, I expected that if he said, I know the ship like the back of my head, he would then get hit in the back of his head.
Is this similar to your whole throwing caution to the wind?
No, it's not because...
That's just more of a misunderstanding.
That's just more of a misunderstanding.
And you want to explain that to the audience, the caution to the wind?
Well, I think you know, you've brought it up.
All right, since I brought it up, I'll explain it. Dan, at one point in his life when he was younger... Mm-hmm. He won't tell us how much younger.
Could have been way younger.
Maybe he was 30. I don't know. He used to think the phrase was not throw caution to the wind, but rather to throw some substance called known as kosh.
Kosh. It's a thing.
To throw it into the wind. So in other words, Dan thought it was to throw kosh into the wind.
I keep thinking kosh is like a koosh ball or something.
All right. Okay.
That's what it sounds like to
me. All right. Yeah. Anyway, so we talked about Paradise City. Oh, yeah, TNG sets.
Wait. Yeah, but anyway, the whole point I was making, no, you asked me if it was like the whole caution the wind thing, and but I'm saying, no, it wasn't. It was more like, to me, the joke is he would say, I know it like the back of my head, and then the joke would be, then he would then get hit in the back of his head. That was what would make it funny. If you say, I know this like the back of my hand, and then he runs into something, the joke is obviously he didn't know it as well as he thought he did, but the joke in my head would have been funnier if the body part he referred to was the one that got fucked up. See what I'm saying? Yeah. And so I kept telling my mom in the theater, I'm like, but he didn't hit the back of his head. And like, I don't remember what she said to shut me up, but I think she got pretty kind of exasperated at one point because it was just such a weird obsessive kid thing to like focus on.
Well, and we are, again, this is for the second part of the movie, but I wasn't a big fan of the Scotty being made into a moron.
Yeah.
Not that he was a moron the whole movie, but it reminded me a little bit of Indiana Jones when you have a Dr. Brody, right? In Raiders of the Lost Ark, Dr. Brody is Indiana Jones's boss.
Right.
And by all accounts, used to be like Indiana Jones, super intelligent, knows a million languages, etc. But then in order to make an admittedly very funny joke in The Last Crusade, they make him a bumbling moron who can't find his way around fucking like Morocco or Cairo.
He gets lost in his own museum.
Some shit, you know? Exactly.
So and that's, lost in the supermarket.
That's sort of annoying when you retcon a character to make them sort of stupid. And they did a little bit with Scotty, so I wasn't a big fan of that. That was they were going for the humor, and I know sometimes you go for the humor, whatever the character says.
Maybe that's why Doohan didn't like Shatner, or maybe Shatner did that to Doohan because he didn't like Doohan.
It could be. I don't know.
Now, was there some kind of thing going on between Uhura and Scotty? Because it seemed like they were dating or something.
Well, they certainly were setting something up like that. I don't know. I don't think there's much of that. Because most of the rest of the series, there was a little bit of Uhura and Spock a couple times, you know, like in the J.J. Abrams movies. I don't know with this Uhura and Scotty business.
I don't know. I just don't know.
You just don't know.
I guess he didn't know.
Let's just not find out.
But what we do get to see is Uhura do her fan dance. That's another strong memory from childhood.
Row, what I meant to say was...
She's naked.
She's naked.
Is she naked?
She's naked.
She's naked.
Naked.
It was pretty intense. I remember as a kid being like, whoa. What? Whoa.
This goes down as another silly scene in the movie. This was really silly. This was one of the sillier parts of the movie.
I liked it.
Where did they get this outfit for? Were they planning this all along?
I just got the impression she took off her uniform and got some palm fronds.
I don't think she was wearing that.
There's no outfit.
So she was just naked.
She was probably wearing Starfleet issue underwear.
She's naked.
Or maybe she was naked because she was covering herself up with the palm fronds when she had her clever little line.
I don't think they have Starfleet underwear. I think she was naked.
Do you have her clever little line, Dan? Is it coming? What's going? I have no idea.
What's her clever little line?
After she lures the men up the dune.
About the captive audience.
About, you know, the line about the captive audience. You don't have that. It's okay. You don't have. It's just, when is this ever going to end? Is this clip ever? I don't know what's happening.
Hello, boys.
There you go.
I've always wanted to play to a captive audience.
Jesse, he had it the whole time.
Yeah. Because they captivized them.
Yes.
They captivized them.
Captivated. You tricked us, Glaubitz.
She captivated them.
Dr. Glaubitz.
And then captivated them.
Captivized them. Yeah. Yeah, no, I thought that was a very silly scene. It was incredibly silly.
It was, but I liked it.
Cringy.
Lure the dumb people away from their horny horses.
I feel like you're giving like a lot of leeway to this episode, this movie, that where you wouldn't normally give leeway to
Why
something.
Why not? It's charming. It's so absurd. It's funny. What's absurd? It's like a TAS is absurd. Come on, you know. Ahura is often coming in and saving the day.
Yeah, but like, she's just like doing this like...
And she likes singing. We know Ahura likes to sing. That's canon.
She was just doing this like naked dance, like out in the middle of nowhere. Like, it's like, I don't know. I don't know. It just seems really fucking weird.
How else would you have recommended luring?
Oh,
like, here's what is.
There's like a million things I could have
done. How much is he getting paid?
What is unbelievable is that all of these men are straight men. That's a little silly, right? Because Ahura wouldn't have worked on all of them, one would presume, right? Why is it all men anyway? Why can't there be some women hanging out watching the
It was a very male-gazy scene.
It was a very male-gazy scene, but it was also making...
It was a fugazi.
But it was making. But it was also making fun of the male gaze.
I don't think it was making fun of the male
gaze. Maybe I'm giving you too much credit there. You're right.
Wallowing into it.
I mean, I guess you could say those dudes, the rebels, were comical in how silly they were, but I don't really...
They were like shimmying their way up the sand.
Yeah, but I give that... That was much...
The guy was all like... Oh damn!
I weight it much more in the gazy part than the non-gazy part.
Yeah. All right.
It's what I'd say.
Well, so they're able to get the horses. They invade. There's some fighting. Cybok gets all pissed off. The whole Pavel Chekhov was having so much fun being like, I'm Captain Chekhov. Captain Chekhov.
Okay.
Like, in fact, I'm the president of the association.
Okay. I would like to point out something.
Dan would like to point out something. He's declared this. Jesse, now we must lean back and we must accept whatever Dan points out per podcast law.
As per podcast law.
All right.
Right.
Now, Dan is staring at his iPad, which contains all his sound clips.
Oh, wait, here it was. Okay, sorry.
Right, he's going to find
it. It just took me a second. I'd actually looked for this before, and I keep losing a spot. But so Chekhov, what do you notice about these two sounds I'm going to play with his pronunciation? Here's number one.
I was beginning to vary.
Okay, now here's number two.
You are in violation of neutral zone treaty. Yes.
He pronounces the V's as W's and the W's as V's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was beginning to vary. You are in violation of neutral zone treaty.
Why doesn't he just pronounce the V's and W's as W's if he can
sometimes
pronounce them?
That's how it happens.
Walter Koenig is not a Russian
right.
speaker.
Right, but it's like...
Nor is Jimmy Doohan remotely close to speaking with a Scottish accent.
So, I'm just saying a little common sense would tell you that the reason you're pronouncing one consonant as another is because the other consonant is hard to pronounce. You wouldn't pronounce one... Like, if a letter is hard to pronounce, you replace it with a different letter. You wouldn't, like... I'm going to pronounce this letter with this one. You wouldn't reverse the letters.
I'm with Jesse. Some letters are just pronounced differently.
Sometimes you reverse it like that.
No, you don't. You don't pronounce. You don't say violation, and then you don't. And then you say. Very. Like you would, if you can pronounce those two consonants fine, you say them like that, and you wouldn't reverse them because you would say what's in your language. All right. You wouldn't arbitrarily take an English word and reverse the letters if you could pronounce both of those consonants. You wouldn't just reverse them.
I think you might.
No, you wouldn't.
I think some languages choose different sounds to be associated with different consonants.
No, because there's... Yeah, in their language, but not if that a person of a different... Like, if their first language is not English and they speak English, they're not just going to arbitrarily start moving English around.
No, but they might be remembering. Isn't that the issue with accents sometimes where people are using their native language pronunciation on English words as they're speaking, hence...
That's more like
a German person saying Wiener Wiener.
No, that's more like that's Wiener. More. That's more okay. First of all, Wiener is Wiener, and Wiener is Wiener.
I like a plump Wiener.
It's not like he's saying like it's not like they're saying Wiener instead of Wiener, and then they're saying I'm wary instead of very, you know what I'm saying? Like, they don't reverse them.
We have to be very, very, and when you're, very, very
and,
quiet.
And when you're talking about people with different accents, if you're talking about people with different accents, the shit that mostly varies is the vowels, not the consonants.
Oh, all right, well.
But there is the thing
bold statements by one Dan Glovitz.
How you would say the word no, and like an Australian would say the word no. Where does it differ? It doesn't differ in the end.
Nar. It differs a lot.
But not in the end.
Not in the end. I mean, fair point, Dan. You got me there. Please.
It wasn't bloodshed. I wanted.
Linguists, please write in at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com and, you know, tell us what's what when it comes to vowels and consonants. All right.
I don't have a clue.
None of us do, Dan. None of us do. Where were we? Okay, yes. Yeah, so Kirk and Spock, et cetera, and their little gang are able to take over the Paradise City briefly.
Okay, they're sending a captain to hand-to-hand combat with some motherfuckers with bayonets. That's an example of what you wouldn't do with a captain.
Some sort of like...
Yeah, but the Kirk always did.
Improvised that. Pipe guns.
That's what that's what they do with all captains, so I'm not going to complain about that.
Spock gave a horse a Vulcan neck pinch.
Oh, yeah, and they...
That was great.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. But yeah, you're right. They had some kind of plumbing guns.
Yeah.
They were shooting rocks. Shooting hard candy.
Yeah, they apparently rocks. Didn't have a stun setting because when Spock didn't shoot Sybok because he didn't want to kill him, and it didn't have stun set.
I think it was just a ballistic.
He should have just shot him in the leg. Why did he shoot him in the leg?
Well, and so here again, we see the turnaround where at first it looks
don't
like...
Don't turn around!
Sounds like... Okay.
Unless you want to see Spock...
I don't think... They haven't shot a Vulcan in a long time. Maybe the Vulcan just
freaks
out.
Unless you want Spock to shoot a Vulcan.
Dan's trying to get it back on topic because he knows I was about to critique him for his... normally he critiques me for the chain of consciousness outbursts.
You shoot a Vulcan, you just piss him off, and he breaks your neck or something.
Don't turn around unless you want to see Spock shoot Vulcans.
Okay. Yes, they look like they've got the upper hand at first.
Doing just fine.
But then they don't because, again, Sybok has weird superpowers.
Yeah.
What happens is Kirk... Kirk and Spock, they find the hostages. Turns out the hostages have been turned by Sybok's superpowers.
Was John like his? John? He wasn't his first apostle.
No,
but like he became his right hand man though.
Well, that's like isn't that like Peter with Jesus? Peter came late and all toadied up to Jesus, and all the other apostles were like, "Hey, we were here hanging out with this brother first, and you're horning in on our shit." Anyway,
yeah, I mean, I wasn't complaining.
Okay.
These are serious charges.
Yeah. So they are able to trick everybody, get them onto the shuttle, and then they have this whole plan. And then we get that. Now the Klingons come back. Now all of a sudden, Klaw is back.
Magda.
Because as you noted, Dan, they just needed somebody to have a threat of occasional violence. I did like this scene though. It's not. It's not like the most brilliant Kirk maneuver ever, but it is still a fun scene.
Are you talking when they land the shuttle back?
Yeah,
when
they land the shuttle in there and Klaw is all like, he's good, you know?
Yeah, right, which didn't make sense because, Kirk didn't do... I mean, Kirk made the call, but it was fucking Sulu who, like, did most of the work there.
Yeah, but,
and Chekhov was the one captaining the ship at the time.
Yeah, but I give Kirk credit for the strategy, right?
Kirk is the one who
came up with the strategy, basically.
I know, and that's the whole reason the captain, like, gets all the credit is because...
And he trusted his people. He knew Sulu could do it.
Right, so that's why the captain gets the credit, right? It's because they're the brain and everyone's their appendage or whatever, right? Mm. But at the same time,
Kirk's appendage.
But at the same time, there's certain things that like it really is unfortunate that the people doing it don't get credit for. Like,
you know what I heard? I heard Kirk's a jerk.
Yeah, that's right. Because what Sulu did wasn't just your normal in the line of duty kind of like duty, kind of like, you know, quality. This is what an everyday officer can do, right? What Sulu did was above and beyond that, something that not many people could do like Sulu can. Yeah. So he deserved a little of that credit, is all I'm saying.
It's also why Sulu's a captain in the next movie.
But I'm just saying
instead of being a 50-year-old helmsman.
I'm just saying that Klaw just assumes it was all Kirk and it wasn't all Kirk. I mean, captains do deserve to get most of the credit, but there are extenuating circumstances like that one where Klaw should have been like, and Sulu wasn't so bad himself.
Yeah. So you would have preferred it if Claw was like, damn, they've got a good crew of people over there.
Yeah.
What
exactly.
A good team. What a
yes.
Good... it's a very Klingon sentiment.
Yes.
Yes.
That's I'm guessing that's another one. That Spock yes is probably going to go on the regular rotation is my guess.
Yes.
Yes.
It could. Yes.
All right.
And notice he says... Kapla. He says kapla.
Yes.
But we're used to them saying like kapla.
Kapla. Well, there's different kapla. He comes from the northern region of
you're just bullshit.
Of Kronos, you're... where they pronounce it Kronos instead of Konos.
Kronos.
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 Hey. I'd like to fill my car with Kronos.
Oh, Lassie. You're the most understanding woman I know.
Handing him some fucking like cheese.
Yeah, right. No.
What the fuck was that?
I don't know.
But we do need to start to close down this first.
Are
chunk.
You fucking kidding me?
Yeah, but we're almost.
What are you
there.
Waiting for?
God, you mouth that. That was weird because you don't usually mouth that. Just play that again.
What are you waiting for?
Yeah, when Dan played that, he mouthed it. It was perfect timing too.
What's going on?
That's weirding me the fuck out, dude. Stop
what are you doing?
It's not good.
What are you doing?
I don't like it.
What are you doing?
Very upsetting.
What are you doing?
Okay, but anyway, they do this Kirk maneuver to escape from Klaus.
Sulu maneuver.
Okay, they smash into the back of the business.
That was cool watching it all go. Like,
it was cool.
That was a good.
And again, I as much as this movie is criticized from a writing standpoint, it's pretty well structured because we saw them landing in the shuttle bay before in the careful, sedate way with the tractor beam and all that stuff. And
there's
that,
something
and by
about-
showing us that tractor. Now we counterpose that with this, it increased the drama of this scene because we saw how it's supposed to look normally.
There's something
that's
about
clever.
There's something about this movie. That touched you just in the right configuration because you're giving it a lot of leeway. And
no,
I think I'm
providing evidence. This movie repeatedly, as a structure, it's a very well structured movie because they keep having these setups and callbacks to the joke, and that's what's effective about it. By setting up this point, later they can do this other thing, and it increases the impact of that thing. In this case, by showing us the slow version of the shuttlecraft landing,
okay.
By then later in the movie, we see this emergency shuttlecraft landing. It's that much more tense since we've seen it in the slow mode.
So this is the moment where this big switch happens, though, because Sulu lands the ship. Basically, he saves the day, and Sulu's all on Kirk's side, and everything's great, right? And then Kirk and Sybok and Spock, they all argue or whatever, and then so they're then. But then the next scene when they come back, Chekov is like, you know, like I'm beginning to worry, and Uhura out of nowhere is just like Sybok knows what the deal is. You know, he's like a good guy.
Well, we already see.
And then Chekov is like, what are you talking about? And then Sulu. Right after he landed that ship and did everything Kirk wanted, he's like, Sybok rules.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
and like, it happened when the Kirk Sybok fucking Spock scene. I just mentioned that scene. I was saying that scene, Sulu landed, the Kirk scene happened, and then it came back to them. So off camera, Sulu went from Kirk dude to the whole crew is suddenly
against
them.
It's not out of the blue because there's
it
a,
is
the,
out of the
no,
blue.
No, but they're like, what do we do with these two? And Sybok says, with Sulu and Uhura, Sybok says, let me talk to them. And he starts talking to them and then the scene ends. So it's not totally out of the blue. We know already that he talks to other people and does magic on them.
But like I said, it all happened off camera and there was
but we were told it was going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. We're told. We weren't shown it was going to happen.
I'm not saying this. I agree. I said at the beginning.
I'm not saying it was like,
look,
I'm not saying I didn't know what was going on. I'm saying like they didn't show us what happened. It was just kind of like, okay, now this happens.
Yes, but at the outset,
At the beginning
of this podcast, I already said I agree that the fact is that this
but
is
you're even
a
defending,
problem.
But you're even defending this part.
No, but let me finish my fucking point.
Well, you won't let me finish my point.
No, you
kept interrupting me when I was trying to tell you my point. So if you're going to interrupt me, I'm going to interrupt you right back.
All right. Let's stop this episode then, because I'm not going to get to finish my point. So,
well, I didn't get to finish mine either.
No, you did.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
No, I didn't, because I was in the middle of talking about what happened off camera, and every time I was making a point, you were like,
no, I was I was making an argument against your point.
Yes, but you were making the argument at the same time I was making my point. You never let me finish mine.
Or you can let me finish mine, and then you can argue whether or not I am responding to your point or not. That's another
option. Well, I'm just saying, like, I would prefer if you wait till I was done with my point before you start yours.
Which I thought you were. Because you sounded like you were repeating your point.
I was repeating my point because you kept interrupting me. That's why I repeat my point. Is when you interrupt me, I say it over and over and over again.
And everyone understands it. So now, what I was saying is I agree that is an underdeveloped the whole Cybok power thing, like I said at the beginning, that's a big problem with this movie because it's totally underdeveloped. That being said, they've just already stated outright that he talks to people and does a magic spell on them.
Yes.
We just have to accept that. And that's so to me, it's like, yes, I find it an annoying part of the movie and it is off screen. I agree with you on all of that. It's just like, but that's the plot of the movie. So, okay, then we have to deal with that. I agree. It's stupid. What I'm trying to get.
I find that more believable with like miserable dirt guy out in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. But I don't find it as believable when it comes to like a crew member, and not only just one crew member, like the entire crew. Instant mutiny.
No, I agree. But my point is simply
the other guys are able to just be like, "Well, I choose not to."
Point is that it is stupid, but it's consistently stupid. The whole movie, that's all I was making. Making the point that this movie is structured in such a way that some of the choices are dumb, some of the choices are brilliant, and they're consistent throughout.
I don't know if any of them are brilliant.
I think all the campfire stuff is brilliant.
I thought it was good. I wouldn't call it brilliant.
I think it's brilliant. I think it's some of the best stuff in all of Star Trek. No joke.
Brilliant.
At the beginning and the end.
I think sometimes you use the word brilliant to like say something that's pretty good.
No, I'm not using it in the British colloquial casual way. I'm using brilliant in the way it's intended, as in it's genius.
See, I think the campfire stuff, I already said I felt it went on a little long for my taste, but it was good. I don't think I'd specifically call anything in this movie brilliant. Right. I thought there were moments of wonder and awe, but nothing I would really call brilliant.
Well, how about this? Let's end this episode.
There's wonder and awe, but there's not
brilliant. Because I do think most of the problems in this movie are in the second half.
Scintillating shine.
The first half of the movie, I think, is quite good. Up until this point, and we'll make the final point, like Sincera was suggesting, we see this, they crash the ship, Kirk tries to take the initiative, fails, but then Spock gets up, Spock has a chance to kill Cybok and doesn't, and then they get thrown in the brig, Kirk is like, what the fuck, Spock is like, oh, he's my brother, and there's that whole business, and
there's the whole thing of him thinking that he can escape the brig. They're like, oh, there's gotta be a way out of this jail cell.
Because he's Kirk, he doesn't believe in a no-win scenario, right?
Right, but Spock was like, oh no, they upgraded the jail cell, so they're no longer escapable.
But so now that's the big twist in the movie, and I think a lot of the rest of the movie hinges on how well you go along with it. I don't have a problem with it because I always liked Spock's argument that you never asked me if I had a brother, basically, is what he's saying, right? He's like, I don't like talking about personal shit. And of course we know in real life, that's just a silly way to add in a character that has a built in, again,
asked him about a sister.
It's a literary shortcut to be like, we want there to be a specific type of relationship between Spock and this character in order to move the plot where we want to be. And Dan, like you've pointed out with the shuttlecraft and the transporter not working, they make a few choices
Copernicus?
Here.
Is it the Copernicus?
Copernicus. The choices are like weird choices, but then result in them being able to tell the plot that they wanted. They worked backwards from the plot they wanted to tell, and they wanted the relationship between Spock and Cybok to be of a familial relationship because they were trying to make a point about found family in Kirk and McCoy and the Enterprise crew, counterposed against a relationship between actual family. So they had to invent this character, and I always thought it was a fun little joke and placates me. I can understand if it doesn't placate other people. Spock's like little like, oh, I never talked about personal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Let's call it a day for that episode, and then we will move on to next week. You'll hear part two of our discussion of Star Trek V, The Final Frontier.
Final Frontier.
Final Frontier. Frontier.
Final Frontier. Is Final Frontier.
And there's a lot to discuss in that last chunk. In the meantime, you can find us on all the social medias, right? You know all the social medias. You got the at It's Got Star Trek on Blueski.
Blueski.
And Threads Blueski. And Facebook and all that stuff. YouTube. You can subscribe to
and
us on
Putz.
YouTube.
Get us some Putz and Bips.
Dan's just covering for the future.
And Tops.
Because these are evergreen episodes.
Blups.
blups.com.au. And then www.itsgotstartrek.com. And if you want to if you want to leave us a voicemail like Sincera did, you can go to itsgotstartrek.com/record.
They say W. Can you imagine?
W.
W is already hard enough as it is, but saying W is hard.
It is. I agree. It is really hard. All right. Yeah. Any sound effects, Dan, to close out episode one?
Well, I mean, I usually have something that I say I play. All right, you so want you me to play it now?
No, I'm just saying, are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, because I'm going to do the whole goodbye thing, and then you can click the thing, and then we can giggle a little bit, and then the episode will be concluded, and then they can look forward to next week's episode.
Oh, boy.
All right. All right. Goodbye.
Now, just a
titter, 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 titter. Chitter,
chittering
bugs.
And titter.
Chitter
and
titter.
Chittering
bugs. Titter and titter.
Titter and chitter.
What's the matter, Jim?
I miss my old chair.